BetRivers Sportsbook has supercharged its iOS app. Download the update today from the Apple App Store and see the difference for yourself. Must be 21 or over to play. Playable only in Indiana. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-9-WITH-IT.
Time now for Sports Talk with Dan Issel and Mike Pratt, right here on ESPN 680 and 105.7. Now, here's Dan and Mike.
And good morning, everybody. Welcome to Sports Talk with Mike Pratt and Dan Issel. Cloudy morning, Monday morning in Louisville. Maybe a little rain, but the latter part of the week is supposed to be beautiful. Mike, did you have a good weekend?
I had a good weekend. I made a little bit on Saturday. Did not have the Preakness, and if anybody tells you they had that horse, you have to think about it and think and ask them how they found that horse, whether it was just a dart throw.
You know what surprised me about that horse is that he was only 11-1. I thought he should have been 20-1. When you go back and look at his past performances, he'd never won a race on the dirt. He broke his maiden in California on the grass.
Yep.
Then he qualified for the Preakness, expenses paid, by winning the El Camino Derby at Golden Gate by a neck on the synthetic surface. And Golden Gate Fields and Pimlico are both owned by the Stronach Group. And so because
he gets in.
He won that race and he got in. And, you know, we saw him run in the bluegrass, Mike.
I remember.
Just kind of ran around there. And, you know, everybody has excuses when you don't win. But I guess his last couple of works coming into the Preakness were pretty good. But, no, I went back and looked at the races I always do, and I still couldn't bet him after the race was over, looking at his numbers. Now, he did get a 102 buyer for the Preakness, and which is the exact same number that Medina Spirit got. It was interesting. I was alive in the pick five.
You like those pick fours and fives, don't you?
Pick fours and pick fives, yeah. And I was alive on a pretty nice ticket. Rumbauer, the pick five with Rumbauer, paid $10,600. Now, I was alive to Medina Spirit, Midnight Bourbon, and Crowded Trade.
Ooh, that's one I didn't have.
Yeah, and I shouldn't have had him because I don't know why I fell on that horse. Because the one thing we can all agree on in this Triple Crown series is the Wood Memorial was a terrible prep race.
Well, you've been saying that. A lot of people have written that.
They have had a number of horses out of the Wood either run in the Kentucky Derby or the Preakness, and none of them got a sniff. So the Wood Memorial, any horse going forward that came out of that race, I think you can throw out. It was good for Mike McCarthy. Kenny Rice, who we had on Friday, had a real nice piece during the show where he interviewed D. Wayne Lucas, Todd Pletcher, and Mike McCarthy.
Yep.
And the theme was not their horses, because I don't think Kenny thought any of them had a chance to win, but the theme was the coaching tree that has come through D. Wayne Lucas. And, of course, Todd Pletcher was one of like 13 assistant coaches that Lucas had that is now out on their own. And McCarthy was an assistant trainer to Todd Pletcher. So it was a real nice piece. Too bad McCarthy didn't say, I think I got a real shot to win this race today.
He was really humble after the race. It gave Pletcher so much credit, and Pletcher was there to hug him.
It was a nice story. Let's hope the horse doesn't test positive. But I did.
There you go.
I did read this. Listen to this. This is great. McCarthy. They went back and checked McCarthy's record. I think he's been out on his own since like 2013, and they went back and checked his record, and he has never had a positive drug test. Never. In 8 years of training. He did get fined one time because he didn't have a nozzle on his water hose.
You're kidding me.
So that's,
how dare he do such a thing?
So that's,
shame on him.
That's
right?
The only negative.
You know what? I've lost everything. If you can't put a damn nozzle on your water hose, what are we even doing in life anymore?
I'm going to quit playing the horses.
That's the only negative they could find on McCarthy. But you know, I love all these stories that come out afterwards. Like, you go back to Medina Spirit and Gail Rice. If you go down to Lexington, Mike, you go to the foaling barns in most of these big farms, and the foaling stalls will be a double stall, and they'll have, straw up to the horse's knees. It'll be heated. And Medina Spirit, Gail Rice, she foaled him out in the backyard on a patch of dirt, and he wins the Kentucky Derby. But this
wasn't that an interesting story about her?
Yeah,
and how she had the horse and. Go ahead. We'll talk about. I mean, that was an interesting story.
Yeah, you're right.
She had to give the horse up for a thou because she was going through a divorce.
She couldn't afford to feed them all, and so she had to let the horse go for a thousand. And then Zidane buys the horse for $35,000 because one of his best friends owned the sire, Protonico. Abazali is his name. And so, but it's all right to lie in this game, because then they interviewed Gary Young, who bought Medina Spirit for $35,000. And he said, out of 600 horses in that sale, I only had 12 horses on my A list, and Medina Spirit was one of them. I'd like to see that list. Gary Young buys horses for hundreds of thousands of dollars. I can almost guarantee you that Medina Spirit wasn't on his A list. They only bought it because of the friendship. But now on this horse, which is very interesting, owned by the Frankens, who, again, very small breeders, I think only have two or three broodmares. And they sell everything. They sell their horses either as yearlings or two-year-olds. And they had Rumbauer in a two-year-old in training race with Eddie Woods, who's a trainer of renown that gets these horses. And to be able to sell these horses, Mike, as two-year-olds, they have to work really fast. Now, most of them only work an eighth of a mile. A few work a quarter of a mile. Medina Spirit was unusual in the two-year-old in training sale, he worked 3 furlongs. That's very, very unusual. But so now the story comes out. Eddie tells these people that he's breaking Rumbauer as a two-year-old. And he tells the Frankens that, because of COVID, they said, you might want to run this horse and try to sell him after you race him. Now, if you read between the lines, that means I can't get this horse out of a common gallop. And so we got no shot at taking him to a two-year-old in training sale. And so they run the horse and wind up winning the Preakness. But it was a feel-good story after all that we've been through since it became known that Medina Spirit tested positive for the Derby.
What I thought was really cool too, Dan, to your point, is that they the lady, what was her name,
Gail Rice,
she was there at the Derby. She was there at the Preakness.
Yeah.
And she said after he won the Derby, she ran down and said, that's my baby. And the current owners could have discounted her and just said, get away.
Yeah.
But they let her be a part. Kenny Rice, I think Kenny interviewed her. And that was really, really, really interesting.
And the owner, Mr. Zidane, who owns Medina Spirit, paid for her to come to the Preakness. I thought that was...
I didn't know that.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah. He fipped the bill for bringing her to the Preakness, which I thought was really cool.
That was. That was really... I thought that was interesting. Mike Maker? He saved me on Saturday, man. You know, I don't bet all the races, but, you know, into the 3-2 count a couple times.
So you're talking about Some Like It Hot Brown.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes,
the one that won the race before. I think Mike Maker won like three races on
Friday.
On Preakness Day.
Friday.
And won some on Friday. But, you know, the Some Like It Hot Brown, and I only had two horses in my pick five. It wasn't a huge ticket. I only had two horses in that race. I had Chad Brown had the favorite that was like 6-5, maybe Sacred Light or Life or something like that. Anyway, I only had two horses in that race. But listen to this. Some Like It Hot Brown. I love how some people are so smart about naming these horses. He's by a horse called Big Brown, who
won the Derby
in the Preakness, and then was eased in the Belmont by Kent DeSermo, the jockey. But he's by Big Brown, and the mare's name is Marilyn Monroe. Not Monroe, Monrone, which is a color of a horse. And so they came up with Some Like It Hot. I believe that's a Marilyn Monroe movie. Some Like It Hot.
Yes, I think it is.
And then added Brown for Big Brown, and it came out Some Like It Hot Brown, which is, of course, a dish.
Delicacy here.
Native to Kentucky. So I like when people are really... really get into it and really smart about how they name their horses.
Well, the winner of the Preakness is spelled how?
Don't ask me.
R-O-N?
I can't spell cat.
B-A-U-R.
Okay. Now, I'm watching this horse come down the stretch, and I looked at him, and I'm going, oh, man, he's driving. And they're saying, Ronbauer, right? And I'm thinking of the winery I've been to in Northern California, Ronbauer, which is a great wine. It's in Northern Kentucky. And it's Ronbauer. And reminded me of a winery. And, of course, I didn't have the ticket, so it could remind me of anything, you know.
But, you know, it'll be interesting. They have they're shipping him to Belmont today and talking about Ronbauer. And they think he's going to run in the Belmont, but the owner is a different kind of guy. The owner is a horse player, and so
horse player being gambler.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
That was his livelihood for a while.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he was a horse player, but evidently when this horse ran in the Bluegrass. And had enough points to run in the Derby, McCarthy wanted to run him in the Derby, and the owner said, "Now we're gonna wait for the Preakness." And now they asked him, "Are you going to the Belmont?" And he said, "Well, it's 50-50." He said, "There's a very rich series for 3-year-olds on the grass. There's $1 million race at Belmont, $1 million race at Saratoga, and this horse is bred for the grass." And so he said, "Well, it's 50-50 to go to the Belmont. We might wait for that grass series to run him." But the Belmont's going to be a great race. There might be 15 horses in the Belmont.
And the filly from the Oaks might run.
Yep. Yep.
You know.
And over the weekend, both of Brad Cox's horses worked. Essential Quality and Mandaloon. They both worked over the weekend. Possibility that one of them goes to the Belmont.
Can they go to the distance, though? They bred to the distance?
They can all go the distance. It's just a matter of how fast they can do it.
I agree. But, I mean, I don't know if they if they shown that they had any juice at the end to go that mile
and a half. The interesting horse to me is O Bezos, who Our good friend Greg Foley has said, you know, he's stepping down a notch. He's going to go make some money. He's going to run in races like the Ohio Derby and the West Virginia Derby. But if you look at him, he was the only horse that was really closing a lot of ground.
He's in the Derby?
Yeah, he's by a horse called Orb. And it would make sense that he would be a real true mile.
How could you not forget Orb?
Suge McGahee.
Yes,
the
sir.
Only Derby.
Yes, sir.
You know, Pletcher had the four horses in the Derby. Now, none of them ran worth a darn, but he always skips the Preakness and comes back for the Belmont. He also has a horse called Promise Keeper that won the Peter Pan, which is a prep in New York for the Belmont. And Hot Rod Charlie, Rock Your World, both went back to California after the Derby. They're possible for the Belmont. And Rebel Romance, what's our guy's name? New York Mike?
Yes.
Yeah, that's New
York. That's his pick, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I try not to remember his name ever since he called me Aldridge or what did he
Malcolm
call me?
Or something.
But Rebel Romance has been at Belmont for 2 weeks now. So it's going to be real interesting. There'll be a lot of horses, I think, in the Belmont and a number of horses with a good chance to win. So we'll follow that when we get closer to the race.
Well, historically, that race has, as they call them, the local shooters or the new shooters.
Yeah.
It's been a good race for those people historically.
Yeah.
Even if they don't win, they're up at the top.
Right. And especially for horses that ran in the Derby and then skipped the Preakness, that gives them 5 weeks in between. But it would be a real story. And Pletcher has done this before. He won the Belmont with a filly called Rags to Riches. And it'll be real interesting to see if he brings Malathat, the Oaks winner, back for the
Belmont.
That's
a nice horse.
Yeah, it's a real nice horse.
That horse has got a legitimate shot.
Real nice.
Coming off a rest, too. Has not run since the Oaks.
Yeah. And yeah. I think she, sold for over $1 million, maybe $1,050,000, something like that. But that's what's so great about this sport. Baffert had a first-time starter yesterday at Santa Anita that they gave $1,300,000 for. He was a Faro, three-year-old, I think. Yeah, three-year-old American Faro horse. They paid $1.3 million for him, and he got beat farther than you can hit a 9-iron. So it's just because they sell for a lot of money doesn't mean they can run. So that's what makes the Darley people, Godolphin, have put hundreds of millions of dollars in this game and have never won the Derby.
Have the American Faro horses done well?
Yeah, but ironically, they have done well on the grass. Most of his stakes winners, and he's had stakes winners all over the world, he's probably had his biggest success in Japan. But he's done very well. But ironically, most of them have been grass horses.
So the question to you is this. I was reading online over the last few days about some coaches on the hot seat, the guy at the Pacers. It may be the guy at Toronto that are on the hot seat.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Even they mentioned Brad Stevens, and I don't see that, but you know.
Well, he's in the play-in game, so he better at least win the play-in game or he will be on the hot seat.
But my point to you in horse racing, if you've got these million-dollar horses and they finish a long 9-iron from the finish line, Is there pressure on trainers by owners who pay this money? Because, you know, the pressure is coming in basketball or football from the owners, from the front office, which is controlled by the owners. Is there pressure to move that horse?
Well, no, they wouldn't move the horse. They just, you know, let him go.
You pay $1.5 million and the horse doesn't run worth a poop. And you're going to leave the horse there? I mean, you know, that's...
Well, you know, those people, it's owned by Coolmore.
Sure.
And Coolmore's business plan is very, very good. They pay a lot of money trying to come up with a few stallions. I think they gave $60 million for Justified. And they figure they can breed 200 mares in the northern hemisphere. Then they put him on an airplane and ship him to Australia and breed him to 100. I mean, they've got this all figured out. That they didn't just that 60 million figure just didn't come with a dart. They're going to make back most of their money if none of the justifies can run. But they did the same thing with American Pharoah. If he hits, then they're going to make a lot of money. And so, you know, they buy a lot of these well-bred horses, and they know the odds. They know what the odds are that, you know, they might not be able to run, and they just, you know, have to wind up.
So at the top, they're not going to move the horses for the reasons you just said, the breeding. Okay.
Right.
But if you get to the middle, where you might find some up-and-coming trainers or guys who are just – hanging on as trainers, and you know they don't have the top of the line horses.
Right?
Do the horses get moved around from those guys when they aren't successful?
Horses get moved all the time. It's just usually it's owners that don't really understand the game, and you know everybody's looking for the hot trainer.
Sure,
I mean
absolutely.
You know, you start
Brad Cox is
exactly
yeah
exactly. Brad Cox has been in this business for 20 years. And he's had Godolphin horses for three. I mean, he just didn't fall into Godolphin horses. He got them because of the success he was having. But, yeah, horses get moved all the time. But I think most knowledgeable owners know what a long shot it is. And they do stupid stuff, Mike. Saturday
owners of ball teams do stupid stuff.
Saturday morning, I got up at 5:30 to go to Lexington, Kentucky to watch our little 2-year-old filly work, and she worked really well. She worked 3 furlongs in 36 seconds. But I got up at 5:30, drove 1 hour and 15 minutes down there and 1 hour and 15 minutes back to watch her run for 36 seconds. So most horse owners aren't too bright to start with.
Hey, Jack, don't you think a man of his status ought to have a driver?
Agreed.
Yep. I usually do, but Sherry was in Omaha over the weekend. Sherry went to Omaha to watch our granddaughter Addison play in a volleyball tournament. So I was a bachelor this weekend.
How'd that work out for you cooking wise?
You know what? I'm really good at breakfast. I do breakfast, which I usually have for lunch. I only eat 2 meals a day. So I usually have breakfast for lunch. And I'm really good at breakfast.
So you double up on the breakfast?
Eggs and sausage. No, I don't do that yet. But then I had too much fast food for the evening meal. So
pizza?
I didn't have pizza. What did I have? Hamburgers, I think.
Hamburgers?
Yeah.
I like soups. My wife makes soups an awful lot. We've got bean soup and chili in the refrigerator now. So I like those. I had a bowl of bean soup last night.
Well, you knew I was going to be batching it this weekend. Would it have killed you to bring me some soup?
I'll bring you some tomorrow.
Well, Sherry's back now.
Oh, is she back?
I don't need any soup now.
Well, you know, what can I say? I forgot. Are you going to cut me from the team?
Are you on the hot seat now?
I could be. Yeah, I really could be.
He's on the hot seat.
Yeah, and I don't have a guaranteed contract, so you know, there you go. I'm stuck here.
Day to day.
That's right. Aren't
we all?
Aren't we all? Yes, we are. Hey, listen. Before we go to break, I want to talk about a guy that we lost, a basketball guy in this state, Bob Jones, who coached at Kentucky Wesleyan College, and they won a national championship. His son, Jeff, played at Virginia. Very good coach himself, is now at Old Dominion. And we lost Bob over last week, and he was 81 years old. Mm. He had a sporting goods store down there. I got to know him a little bit back in the day when I was working with Converse, and really, really a good guy. And we hate to lose those guys in our former profession of coaching.
Absolutely, especially the good ones.
Absolutely. And his son, I tried to, when I was at Charlotte, I came in and talked to him just because, you had to. And then he blew up, as they say now. He became a really highly prized recruit. Jeff did. Played at Virginia with Sampson on those really good teams.
Right, yeah.
He was the point guard. So
So he got too good for NC Charlotte.
That's right. You know. A lot of people got too good.
Who was the first school that contacted you? Who do you remember? Was it a big school or was it a little school?
I couldn't tell you. My mom saved a bunch of letters, and when she passed, I got them someplace up in the attic.
Well, go find them. I'd like to.
Probably it might have been Dayton.
You know, my dad did the same thing. He had a shoebox full when he passed. I got it. He had a shoebox full of every letter I ever received from colleges back when I was in high school. So that's fun to go through. But the reason I ask is the first school that contacted me was Miami of Ohio.
Oh yeah sure. And Tate's Lock was Tate's coach.
I don't know if Tate's was there. That might have been before Tate's. You start with the UNC Charlottes and the Miami of Ohio's, and maybe you get good enough that you get to go to Kentucky.
Yeah, well, to your point, the first school that we visited, and I say we because my mom and dad and brother, my mom's family's from Toledo. So one time in the spring after my junior year, or I guess it was early summer, we're going to see Grandma and my mom's sisters who lived there. So my mom had gone to Bowling Green. That's where she went to school and graduated from. So first person in her family to ever graduate from college. And we stopped at Bowling Green and went into – my dad had a friend from where he's from, Bell Fountain, Ohio, that ran a like a drugstore / grocery store back in the day, right on the campus of Bowling Green. Mm. And so my dad went in to see him. And so it was a surprise, and we got to talking, and he got to talking about he had heard about me as a young player. And so we left there, and he called the basketball coaches, and said, "You got this guy walking around your campus just looking at this place." And that's all we were doing because my mom had gone to school, and I hadn't heard from Bowling Green. Hadn't paid any attention if I did. And but
hey, we could have been rivals.
Yeah,
I could have gone to Miami of Ohio and you could have gone to Bowling Green.
But back in those days, Nate Thurman, one of the all-time special rebounders in the NBA, Howie Komise, a shooter, Howie Komise played guard, he played in the NBA, and coached Virginia. You know who coached Virginia? Squires from Long Island. When Bud Olson went.
Bianchi.
Al Bianchi. When Bud Olson went into.
Sounds like two syllables.
I saw his face, but when Bud Olson went into the Ohio Basketball Hall of Fame, this has been 10 years ago, 12 years ago, Hoskett invited me up to be there. So we went up and sat with them. And Bianchi also went in. Now, he's from Long Island, but he played at Bowling Green, played in the NBA, coached.
Yep.
And so Al had the greatest acceptance speech I ever saw. And we'll close out this half hour on this. They introduced him, said he played at Bowling Green. He was from Long Island, NBA, blah, blah, blah. And Bowling Green was really good then. So Al comes up in an open collar shirt. This has been 10 years ago, sport coat. They give him whatever they gave him.
Right.
He waves it in the air and goes back and sits down.
Didn't say a word.
Didn't say a word.
When you're in the audience, you like those speeches. Some of them get a little long. And we'll talk about, when we come back, we'll talk about some of the speeches at the Basketball Hall of Fame inductions this weekend. You're listening to Sports.
And the future
Hall of Famers. And the future Hall of Famers. You're listening to Sports Talk. Mike Pratt and Dan Issel on ESPN Louisville.
Exmark makes the mowers that care for the lawns that set the stage for the backyard life. As the commercial mowers more landscape pros trust, Exmark mowers get you on and off the lawn without compromising cut quality, comfort, or reliability. Exmark, official mowers of the backyard life, starting at $29.99. Learn about the available finance offers and check them out today at The Mower Shop, 7400 Preston Highway, Louisville, Kentucky, 502-969-6433.
Before you take another step. There's something you should know about the years ahead and how they'll be. You'll be living in a world where roses hardly ever grow.
You're locked on Sports Talk with Dan Issel and Mike Pratt, right here on ESPN 680 and 105.7. Now here's Dan and Mike.
Welcome back. This is Sports Talk with Dan Issel and Mike Pratt, and that is in your honor, Mr. Issel. That is the one and only Charlie Pride. And I reach back into the depths of country western for you on that one.
Where roses hardly ever grow. Absolutely. Absolutely. Charlie was a all-star, Hall of Famer.
He was a dandy. Speaking of Hall of Fame, I want to get your opinion on the ceremonies this weekend and the nominations for next year. Some people have said, media-wise, that this was the greatest Hall of Fame class ever.
I think you can certainly make the argument when you just look at the top three, Kobe and Tim Duncan and Kevin Garnett. You look at their accomplishments, if you just look at those three. You could say that it was the greatest class ever. Certainly a very emotional weekend, a lot of great speeches. I hope my grandson had a good time at his prom because he caused me to miss the weekend.
Well, let me tell you, Crean, you'll have to see the pictures of his grandson and his date. And, you know, to go watch a bunch of old basketball players get honored versus going out with that lovely young lady. I can understand.
You think he made the right choice?
Yeah. Well, my goodness. And then he had, what, a bus? He and his friends had like a bus to take him to the prom.
They're out of control.
A bus made into a limo, right?
I haven't talked to him since the prom Saturday night, but I'm sure they had a big time. But anyway, very emotional weekend with Kobe going into the Hall of Fame and Michael Jordan do the presentation and his wife making the acceptance speech. And Kevin Garnett, a lot of these acceptance speeches, you're not recognized for what you say. You're recognized for what you don't say. And the buzz around Kevin Garnett was in his acceptance speech, he mentioned a number of his Boston teammates, but did not mention Rajon Rondo and Ray Allen. And I guess there's some history there between him and Allen after they left the Celtics.
Yeah, I know, because him and Pierce and I believe Rondo also were not happy when Allen went to the Heat. He'd left the Celtics for the Heat.
Oh, okay. All right.
That was it, huh?
But I thought Rondo was one of his best friends. I don't know why he was left out.
Yeah, I don't know about that one. But, yeah, that's been a thing for a while now, the Allen stuff.
Yeah. But don't you think that's petty? I mean,
It's the NBA. Of course it's petty. I mean, that's what the NBA is. It's the world's pettiest league. That's what makes it fun. I mean, I'm not wrong.
No, you're probably not wrong.
But, I mean, you're going into the Hall of Fame. They're recognizing you. Why try to get even with somebody?
Because he'd rather be petty.
but it was a great weekend. And they also, Michael, announced on Sunday, yesterday.
Yes, sir.
Who this year's class, of course, because of COVID, the class they inducted Saturday night was actually 2020. And so now they've announced the class for 2021. And I don't know. This is a very underwhelming class. And there's 16.
Speaking of petty.
there's 16 people being inducted into the Hall of Fame. I'd like to see it, you know, for years and years, it was 4 and 5 and 6. I don't know if 16 is the biggest class ever, but I think there's some names on this list. I'm not really sure if they're Hall of Famers or not.
So who would you speculate that marginal Hall of Famers?
Well, I hate to pick out anybody, but...
come on, this is Sports Talk Radio.
You know, Rick Adelman, and I've known Rick for 100 years. When I was a sophomore, Case and I went to the Olympic trials down in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And Rick Adelman was my roommate for a week. Got to know Rick really well. He was a senior. He got drafted in the NBA after that. But Rick never won an NBA championship. Now, he got to the NBA Finals twice when he was coaching that great Portland Trailblazer team with Walton and Clyde Drexler and Maurice Lucas.
No, he wasn't coaching that, was it? Did he not coach Drexler and Porter? He was still playing when Larry in was playing with Portland.
Adelman was still playing then?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, yep. I got that.
I think so. I think so, yeah.
But he got
Portland. Jack Ramsey coached the 77.
Right. You're right. You're exactly right. But he did get, when he was coaching at Portland, he did get them to two NBA finals. They lost to Detroit 1 year and to the Bulls, I think, the other year. So he never won an NBA championship. He was never NBA Coach of the Year. And his final record as an NBA coach, he coached for a long time, coached for like five or six different teams. His final record was 1,042 and 749, a winning percentage of 58%. So I don't know. I don't know. The other one that I questioned was Bill Russell going in as a coach. Now, Bill Russell's He went in as a player in 1975. He's one of the greatest players that ever played the game. No question about that. But now he's being inducted a second time, and I think he's the fifth. I used to know this. He's either the fifth or sixth person that has been inducted twice, once as a player and once as a coach. But the two championships he won, he was a player coach. Red Auerbach retired, and they had that great team in Boston.
Havlicek?
Was it at the end of his career that Havlicek, but he had the Joneses at...
No, I think Havlicek was probably in the middle of his career.
His career?
Yeah.
But, you know, he was a player coach for one of the greatest teams of all time. And, you know, all he had to do to coach that team was basically tell them what time practice started. And then he coached a couple of other places. Seattle was one of them. And was basically a 500 coach.
If that.
So I don't know about that one. But I wish it was a little more selective. My favorite is Cotton Fitzsimmons. Did you know Cotton at
all? I did a little bit, yes.
What a funny guy he was.
He was a character.
And he coached the Phoenix Suns for a good long while. And then he was even more popular when he became the color analyst on their TV games. And Cotton went in as a contributor, not as a coach.
What does that mean? He didn't go in as media.
Right. A contributor is basically somebody who has made a great contribution to the game of basketball. You weren't good enough to go in and as a player. You weren't good enough to go in as a coach. Maybe you didn't do either one. Like Jerry Reinsdorf, who was owner of the Bulls, he went in as a contributor. One of the people elected as a contributor this year is Garfunkel. You talked about Garfunkel's
Howard
camps.
Garfunkel.
Yeah, yeah. Yep. And so he was contributed by having these great summer league camps. But Cotton was really, really a funny guy and loved. He's from Missouri, and he had a basketball camp outside of St. Louis. And I went one summer, I went and spoke at his basketball camp, and he picked me up at the airport and drove me to the camp. But he was a horse player renowned.
Really?
In fact, at Turf Paradise in Phoenix, one of their biggest races of the year is called the Cotton Fitzsimmons Handicap. Oh yeah! If Cotton wasn't in a gym, he was at the racetrack, and he had one of the funniest lines that I've heard. You know, every team has a chaplain, and so you do hour and a half before the game, you invite people from the visiting team and people from the home team to go to a chapel service. Our chaplain was a guy by the name of Bo Mitchell. And Bo was a great athlete at CU. He played baseball and basketball. His father, and I'm getting off track here, his father was Dale Mitchell, who played Major League Baseball. And I looked this up because I knew I was going to be talking about him. And he batted from 1948 to 1960. He batted 312. The only two players during that time period that batted higher.
As an average? Ongoing average?
Yeah. His lifetime average is 312. The only two people that batted higher during that period of time, Ted Williams and Stan Musial. Pretty good.
Wow.
Pretty good baseball players, huh?
Pretty good company,
Here is a stat.
Who did he play for? I didn't remember the name.
Played for the Cleveland Indians. He was on their World Series championship team. Was that 48?
I think
they won the World Series in 48.
I think it was 49.
I think it's 48. Anyway, he finished third in the MVP voting that year behind Ted Williams and Lou Boudreau, who was the shortstop for the Cleveland Indians.
Yeah.
And I think he might have been the manager.
Good call, 48.
48, yeah.
Yep. Beat the Boston Braves in six.
See, and I did that without looking at my phone.
Now, on the topic, though, of basketball and this class, as you mentioned, go people, but were you surprised that Chris Bosh was a first ballot Hall of Famer?
Well,
he was really good and all, but I mean, like, first ballot Hall of Famer, Chris Bosh?
You know, the one I think is deserving, maybe you don't. I would agree with you, Cream. Chris Webber.
Yeah.
Pretty good basketball player.
Yeah, take Chris Webber deserving, Paul Pierce.
And Paul Pierce. Paul Pierce is a first.
Yes.
Yeah, but Bosh is a guy that never averaged more than 24 a game, never scored or never rebounded more than 10 a game, and really before he kind of third wheeled LeBron Wade, never won anything.
Right.
So I mean, like
he never won anything in college either.
Yeah. He never won anything at Georgia Tech. Yeah. I mean,
well, I think,
for me, like I think that he's closer to not being a Hall of Famer. I think there's better arguments for that than him being a first ballot Hall of Famer.
Crean, I think those are all real good points, but don't ever interrupt me again when I tell a story. So Dale Mitchell.
Dale Mitchell. Let's go back to Dale Mitchell.
Now listen to this. Listen to this stat. In his career, he had 3,984 at-bats. Almost 4,000 at-bats. Guess how many times he struck out?
Yeah,
4,000 at-bats. Guess how many times he struck out?
660 times.
119.
Jeez.
In 4,000. Javi Baez struck out 119 times last month. He struck in.
The sad thing is, I don't even think you're exaggerating.
In 11 years of playing, he struck out 119 times. Now, here's one more Dale Mitchell fact.
I can't remember ever having a Dale Mitchell baseball card, and we all collected those things, right?
Here's what he is infamous for. He struck out the last out of Don Larson's perfect game with the Yankees.
In the World Series.
He struck out. And if you go back and look at some of those old films, the ball was at least six inches outside. And the umpire
called
third strike. But anyway, so Bo Mitchell was our chaplain. And Cotton Fitzsimmons had this funny line. He said, you know, I struggle a little bit. When Charles is late for the pregame talk because he's been in the chapel service, and then I see him leaving the arena with a woman on each arm.
I was just going to say, we had the same chapel service, and I would go in sometime when I was an assistant or doing – well, we didn't do any home games, but an assistant. Or I might be in Charlotte for a game and for meetings. And I would see some guys I know that played in the day league and the night league. Yeah.
It was interesting, talking about chapel service, it was interesting to see how many teams or how many guys participated. I coached some of the guys I coached, you know, there'd be a couple guys that would go to chapel. And then that really nice team I coached with Dikembe and LaFons and Brian Stith, I think over half of our team would go to the chapel services. But, okay, that's my chapel service story. All right, let's go back to what you – I think if you go down this list, I think you can point out several people that probably
– marginal.
Yeah, to make the Hall of Fame.
As someone who is in the Hall of Fame, does that bother you at all that there's people in it that you think maybe shouldn't be in it?
It doesn't bother me. The Hall of Fame has been unbelievable to me and my family. I would never criticize the people that run the Hall of Fame, and I understand that, you know, it's a money making proposition. I mean, they've got to fill the place up with people who want to come. But I
had $1,000 a ticket.
Yeah, $1,500.
$1,500. Excuse me.
and I'm talking about also the Hall of Fame people that pay $10 or whatever it is to get in, and you know, they need people in there, and there isn't
people that visit the Hall of Fame.
There really isn't that many people in the Hall of Fame. But I think if you're putting 16 people in a year, that might be a little too many.
Other questions: have they changed recently how the criteria for getting into the Hall of Fame in terms of, like, because I went and looked it up last night about Chris Bosh. It was 4 years after you retire, you're eligible to get in. Have they changed that at all?
I don't think so. I think
that's interesting, because Akeem Olajuwon, one of the greatest centers of all time, took 7 years after retiring to get in.
Yeah.
And John Stockton took like 15 years after that. I'm thinking, it took those guys that long to get in there, but they put Chris Bosh in on his first try? It's like, what are we doing?
You know, Green, you supported that statement very well.
That was good. That was good research. What they have done is started a lot of these committees, like the Veterans Committee. That's a committee that's formed that you have to be out of basketball for 35 years, and they want to make sure that nobody from back then fell through the cracks. And so this year, Bob Dandridge, from the Milwaukee Bucks, was elected by the Veterans Committee. And that's a direct elect. There's 7 people on the committee, and if you get a unanimous vote, you go in. That's the last step. Foreign players, Tony Kukoc went in this year from the foreign committee.
Yeah, that's how Vlade Divac got in a few years ago, right?
Yeah, so they have added a lot of these, and there was an ABA committee for about 7 years, I think. Let's see, Roger Brown, Mel Daniels, Artis Louie, Bob Leonard, maybe 5 years. 5 or 6 years there was an ABA committee, but now that's over with, and all those ABA players fall into the Veterans Committee group. So they have added different committees. But they tell us right off the bat, they say, you're not obligated to put anybody in. You know, if you don't think there's anybody on this list who deserves to be in the Hall of Fame, we don't have to put in anybody. But I've never seen, once these committees are formed, I've never seen the committee say, now, there ain't anybody we want to put in this year. So,
well, that wouldn't be good PR.
Yeah, they feel like if they want the committee to stay around, they got to keep putting people in, I guess.
I guess so.
Well, before we go to a break, and afterwards, I want to talk about the playoffs. Get your thoughts on the playoffs.
We have all of the positions
we do
decided now. The play-in teams,
we do
the seeds and everything.
But let me also say, I believe last week the Kentucky Hall of Fame High School Basketball announced their classes too, or their class. And I've got to go back, and I left my notes whether that includes last year because of COVID and right. this coming year.
That's down in E-Town, right?
Down in E-Town.
The High School Basketball
yeah,
Hall of Fame.
And that's, they've done a really good job. We know quite a few people that are in it.
Mm-hmm.
And we can talk a little bit about that. I'm trying to get up with some guys that I think went in last year or this year. Clarence Glover is one. I've got Clarence's number from Western. And Joe Hamilton.
Right.
I think that's really interesting. They're very interesting because we're not from Kentucky, but we know so many guys either played against or played with.
Here.
Yeah, yeah. And the other thing, Crean, I want you to find, if you would please, Jay Billis in Wojo. That particular conversation, great, wonderful. And I think that those give us a lot to talk about here in the second hour. But my question to you is, can anybody on the Lakers slow Curry down?
Oh,
we'll talk about that.
Did you watch
not
that
game? Beat him, but
yeah.
not stop
him. Did you
him,
watch that
down?
Game last night?
A little bit, yes.
I watched most of it. He's incredible. Now, he took an awful lot of shots last
yeah,
night.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
he
yeah.
took a career-high number. I think it was either 36 or 38 shots, and 22 of them were three-pointers. But, Michael, he's shooting the ball 5 feet behind the three-point line. And the Lakers better be very careful because obviously they're the better team and they should advance without any problem. But, you know, you get a kid like that, you get him hot, and you start concentrating on him and leaving somebody else open, they got a few other guys that can play.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting series. I think there's some other interesting series we can talk about, too. There's some people, the Pacers. Are the Pacers going in the right direction, going into to the playoffs? The Charlotte Hornets got in, but are they going in the right direction? Is Boston going in the right direction?
Yeah, that's going to be a real interesting one to watch.
They've got the Wizards who are playing pretty well right now.
Who have a couple of guys that can put the ball in the basket.
Yeah. So when we come back, for the second hour, Sports Talk with Dan Issel and Mike Pratt, we'll talk about those things. This is ESPN Louisville 680 1057.
Make your life better with a new job at UPS. Join Team Louisville as a warehouse worker, earn $14.50 per hour plus a $175 weekly bonus for some shifts. Search and apply now at upsjobs.com/Louisville. That's upsjobs.com/Louisville.